Hello, everyone, and welcome to the latest episode of By the Numbers. I'm your host, Richard Lewis, and joining me, as he always does, is, of course, Duncan Thorin Shields. Sam Davis, the producer, is lurking in the background. He's just woke up from a nap. I've just got out of recording some Rocket League for E-League, and, of course, my Twitter's been blowing up today. I'm not even going to dignify the piece that went out today with time on this podcast. Needless to say, though, the previous episode, I must have been onto something. You know, I could feel it, sense it, that the outsiders are coming and they want to push the people out so they can occupy the space. It's transparent, it's pathetic, and it's done without authenticity or even respect for the audience they hope to entice. It's a complete joke. So...
This is actually why also, a funny thing is, I've had this happen in my own life as well. Where let's just talk about this for like a very quick minute. So do you remember the first time, this would have been like a couple of years ago, because obviously it was after all that Gamergate stuff came out, which is when I first heard about identity politics. Because obviously, you know, I'm only in gaming, right? I don't even follow normal politics usually. Not interested at all, just in gaming my whole life, you know, it's my little niche. So when I heard about stuff like that happening in gaming, I remember being like, what does that have to do with gaming? Like, you know, why do I need to care about this? And I would always ask you like the basics of it, because I knew you followed political stuff, but I would always sort of say like, is this really going to affect us though, and think like, nah, probably not, right? It's just about like mainstream stuff. And like, for example, you'd think to yourself, how is like militant feminism going to affect like esports tournaments? You think, well, probably not, is it? I mean, everything's fine. But this is just a lesson, all this stuff that's happening now, to why almost everyone who listens to these sorts of shows, you have to actually get informed on the very basics of this stuff, because it all follows the same playbook over and over and over again. Like, for example, what you'll find is whenever people write a hit piece, it doesn't even do what it says on the tin. Like, the aim of the piece is not actually discredit the person and then defeat that person outright against their opinions, right? What it always is exactly what that like famous, like, I think it's like Rule 13 of Saul Alinsky's Rule for Radicals, which is the one that's like, you know, like freeze the target, like cut off its support network. Like, that's the main point of leverage these people will always attack, is everyone associated with the person. So what they won't spend the time trying to argue with the person and be like, you are wrong, here's why. What they'll try and do is just progressively more and more abstract reasons as to why you can't even show any signs of support to someone. So for example, if you support their work, suddenly you support their opinions. If you've followed them or you've tweeted them, you support their opinions. I even saw one tweet where someone literally said, this is someone Thorin has retweeted. Now, they weren't talking about my retweet of the person. Their implication was, if I've retweeted anything that person said, I now agree with all of their other opinions I explicitly didn't tweet. So if you can see the point I'm making there, like, these people, when they come in, have an agenda. It's not all just off-the-cuff behavior that they're just thinking up now. This is an approach that they're going to take when they come into esports, because this is how, in political history, you've been able to defeat certain opponents at certain times by doing things like cutting off the few people who might vouch for you. And then someone says, oh, but I've worked with them in this context. And you say, oh, so in that case, do you agree with something they've said? You know, sort of an ideological purge, basically. So even though it's not a big issue, this isn't like the end of the world, obviously. It's some of that will blow over. But it almost certainly will continue, at least for the coming years, because that's just where the climate of the general world of politics is at the moment anyway, right?
Yeah, and I, you know, look, I've talked about this on my actual podcast. You know, there's new rules now. Like, there was this guy over at Gay Times, and it was the first time they'd appointed a person of color as the head of Gay Times. It was quite a historic appointment. And a BuzzFeed journalist went through his Twitter feed and found like tweets from like 2011 where he said, oh, I don't want to go to Africa because I'll probably get killed because I'm gay. You know, he said he did say some pretty...
Not exactly the most unreasonable random opinion either.
he did say some pretty off-color stuff, though, as well. You know, he insulted Jewish people. From what I remember as well, I think he said a few nasty things about disabled people, which isn't cool. Okay. But it's you know, 6 years old. Surely he's already been vetted for the job. Surely he's already been deemed...
Especially in big companies. I mean, well, that's actually something a lot of people might not know, but big companies will check social media and they'll search all that shit, you know.
Yeah, and you know, he literally was in the job 2 weeks before BuzzFeed published this piece, and in revelation of the tweets, which he'd even forgotten existed, he was fired. So in the need to serve identity politics, they got a gay person of color fired from a historic appointment. And the rules are different now. It yes. feels like you can never atone for the things that you did. Like the load, right? If I'm to take that article at face value, here are my sins. This is why I'm not allowed to represent esports. This is why I'm a bad person. I acted in self-defense when someone tried to attack me, and they had a bigger following than me socially. And to be clear, and I've said this many times, I can't guarantee I wouldn't act the same way again if somebody attempted to attack me. But within the context of the fact that it was Loda, it was at a DreamHack event, it almost feels like maybe I should have just been willing to risk getting punched in the face. I don't know. Like, maybe he wouldn't have done it. I don't even know what's right anymore about that particular issue. I definitely regret the way it went. It soured a lot of relationships with DreamHack, a company, you know, I had a lot of love for and a lot of friends at. And, you know, those fences haven't even been made to this day. And then the other thing is they got banned from Reddit for being rude to people.
Yeah, I've never understood the Reddit one, because that's the one where, like, this is one of the problems with, actually, I think, with any sort of a system where there's people who are admins, etc. What's bizarre is, if you sat most people down who use Reddit and go, are you a bad person if someone bans you from Reddit? They'd go, well, this is the website, isn't it? But what's weird is when you get into it and you start thinking, suddenly you do sort of think, oh, that does say something. But it doesn't, though, does it? It's just a website. Like, it's not like you were banned for posting, like, illegal pornography or some like ridiculous hate crime stuff. You literally just annoyed the wrong mods and they decided to fuck with you. And it was a war. It was a war of attrition, right? That's it.
Yeah. So, you know, I don't understand. I don't understand how that necessarily speaks to my character. And here's what I will say. You know, the idea that, for example, I'm not welcoming of people in esports, absolutely ridiculous, completely absurd. As I said yesterday, I've been the guy that's been out there preaching the evangelical about esports and wanting more people to get involved and welcoming people of all backgrounds, you know, all belief systems, you know, all genders, whatever it is. Like, it's never mattered to me. The great thing about esports is you can check all that bullshit at the door if you want to. We create our own identities, which is something you actually pretty much stated in your speech, in a way, you know, we can seek our own validation. We don't need external validation. And the esports community, in my experience, looks after its own, respects its own, its understanding of people from whatever background. This is what we are. It seems to be nonsense. You know, I what makes it all the worse is the people they tried to invoke as examples of people who might be oppressed.
It was mad, wasn't it?
These are the people that me and you have, you know, and again, I'm almost loath to bring it up. I don't want to take any credit for the things these people have achieved. This is the other thing they put you in. This is the social justice half Nelson that you can never get out of. I could call upon these people to defend me, but when people do get attacked more than average, you don't want to push them out to take fire for you.
Oh, that's another part. And when you said the rules are different, that's another thing I want people to understand. These people won't just attack like me or you, so the target in this case. Everyone else is just collateral damage to them. So if a woman or anyone who they consider some oppressed group comes out and says, this isn't true, I've known this person, they didn't do these things, they will then say things like, either you've just internalized all these negative concepts, or you're like essentially kind of like a traitor for saying these things, or even more ridiculous, they'll just say, well, then how do you justify? And then they'll list something else that the person's claimed, as all the person would need to, you know, like, as all, like, do we really live in a world where I can't be friends with someone or have an uncle or a boss unless I agree with every opinion and can defend everything they've ever said? No, it would be no one would live in that world out of choice, but they will make you live in that world if you kind of thought. I've realized the secret to doing this right is you have to be so ideologically set in your ways that when the other person does what a normal person does in a conversation, which is like, right, we've reached an impasse. So to get to the next point, I'll kind of give you a bit of ground. Like, I'll, for example, I'll accept this premise. Can we do that? And then we'll discuss it. They'll just do that, but never give anything from their side. And all that happens is you gradually move more and more towards them. And if you've been in it long enough and you've seen enough of these discussions, you almost have to take yourself out and go, where the fuck are we even stood right now? We're in the middle of nowhere. I'm defending myself against some comment that they've interpreted that I never even said that way, but they've decided because they've interpreted it. Mean, you know, you get in the middle of nowhere because it is unreasonable behavior at the outset from these people.
Yeah, and look, and again, all this talk about fucking, you know, let's make it more inclusive, let's make it more diverse, let's make it more safe. I've actually put my fucking, you know, I've actually done that. You know, the thing that I always loathe is that the critics haven't done what I've done. You know, how many young people have I mentored and got into jobs? And again, you know, I say young people. The identitarian elements have never been an issue. It just doesn't matter to me. I just want you to get to where you want to go. And if I can help, it's good. You know, and again, it's ridiculous that, you know, someone like my housemate Maria has to come out and say, you know, this guy, like, I was in a bad situation and this guy, like, literally gave me a home and took me away from people who were being exploitative and not having my best interests at heart. And again, if somebody who does something like that can still be deemed a villain, then what are we all doing here? You know, like, I mean, what is the gold standard? And I don't understand how, again, people only want to talk about your sins. They never want to talk about your virtues. I think that's just an incredibly unfair landscape. And I'm sure if we dig into the people who write stuff like this and apply this standard, we'll find mistakes. We'll find errors of judgment. And let's be clear with what a mistake or an error of judgment is. Making an off-color remark, making a joke, saying something in my case, perhaps being a bit too ready to defend myself in a situation that had I been able to take stock of it, if it hadn't happened so quickly, maybe I could have assessed the situation differently. This is it. This is as bad as it gets. We're not out there fucking Weinsteining people or anything, yet the way that piece made us sound and made everybody, I mean, three people out of the five who were mentioned in it had nothing to do with esports anyway. I don't know, dude. It was, you know, it's like I said, I don't always agree. You know, we disagree on some of the issues that they brought up, things that you said, but the one thing I know we agree on is that we want as diverse a group of people in esports as possible. You know, I've never heard you say anything to the contrary on that. So,
well, mainly because, and I mean, by the way, this just shows how far this ideology's gone, that what I'm about to say would actually be considered a terrible thing to say, which is I've never stopped and thought about what race someone is, what gender they are, what their political background is, if they've been working in esports. I just looked at, did they do good work? Okay. If they do good work and they haven't, for some reason, fucked with me, probably promote their work. Yeah. Don't think I've ever stopped and went, oh, there's this new person in esports. They are a woman, though. But, you know, they're pretty good for a woman. Never done that in my life, I don't think.
Yeah. So, and again, like I say, it was just a weird thing to wake up to, honestly, because, you know, I was all pumped about going in and doing Rocket League, another game under my belt, you know, which is something that I always cherish. And it was just like a weird start to the day, like just some bizarre hit piece. And, you know, it's not going to be the last one. And I'm telling you, much like the rant I said yesterday, There's a group of people that think they're going, like, moving forward, they're going to set the standard of who can and can't be involved in esports. And the terrifying prospect is if they can convince just one or two companies or one or two publications to start leveraging pressure, because, you know, there's a Polygon article around the corner, you know, and then it's going to be a games developer is going to get co-opted into it. It could very well be who've not necessarily done anything positive for the space are going to start pushing people out based on their perceived ideological differences. And again, I say perceived because if anybody knows me, they know what I'm about. And it's not even a case of you've got to know me or anything like that. Just show me the evidence that I'm not inclusive. Where is it? There must be this abundance of it, right? So it was super strange, dude. Like, just a really weird piece. Like, I'll even say it you know, I can understand with some of the jokes you've made. I can understand people building that case or attempting to build that case.
Sure.
Against you.
Well, then again, that's also what's bizarre, right? Why are the jokes always then misrepresented completely?
Yeah.
Like, I've never understood to this day what race Polish people are that apparently I am against. Has anyone ever explained that to me? You know the real reason they say that, don't you? Is because if you even said nationalist, which wouldn't even really then work, because I'm definitely not someone who's ever been proud of the UK and trumpeted it, definitely never had anything specifically against one country, it wouldn't sound as bad, though. So I think that they purposely label it racism because when someone hears racism, they go, fucking hell, racism. Mm. Whereas if you actually had to explain all the context, which you would if you just said this person said something about a country, you'd have to really get into the whole specifics. But you don't need to hear the story if you hear it's racism, right? You just go, well, I'm not on board with that. So whatever it is, I'm against it.
Yeah. You know, so again, I said I wasn't going to give it any attention. We've just rabbited on about it. But, you know, at the end of the day, like I don't even know if I'm going to get a right to reply to that. I don't even know if it's just going to sit there as like just some sort of weird, you know, and I know enough about how the games press works to know that once one think piece comes up of a particular topic, five other appear because no one's got any imagination in the medium, you know. So, but whatever, this is,
I mean, all I would say is this, like, first of all, as you kind of pointed out, this sort of thing, like, while it's still fairly mild, is just like the first wave of the sort of thing that's going to happen esports gets bigger. It's part of esports getting bigger and penetrating the mainstream, you know, is that these people have already colonized all those areas and they will definitely make their roads in. It's happened with video games, as I referenced, happened with comics. You know, by the way, a lot of these areas are the areas where like socially vulnerable men are. That's a whole separate topic, but you can figure out why that would be somewhere these people would want to colonize. And then you've got to consider, in terms of like at the present point, it doesn't matter how many times you defend yourself against these things or outline the context. Like, I'm sure they could easily go on your channel and find all the videos where you explain all these situations. It just makes it obvious that the people writing these pieces aren't actually interested in getting to the bottom of it. They just have an agenda in mind and they've served the agenda.
So here's a question. You piqued my interest here. Like, because you know you've said some shit that is, I don't know. It's over the line, maybe. Not over the line. You know what I mean?
Oh, give me an example. What are you thinking of when you say that?
Okay, so in my mind, like, I don't even necessarily mind the Polish thing. I thought that was really overblown. It
the
wasn't
only
ideal
thing
to
I
say
have with
before
the
you went to a Polish
thing.
Event.
By the way, I've always stood by everything I said there. I've never said it was all lies or it was incorrect. Yeah. I've said probably the timing was a bit off, and if I look back now, I probably wouldn't say a lot of it. But one thing that has always, the one thing that irritates me about that scenario is that people to this day present it as a rant. Right? Have you ever seen the video?
Yeah. It wasn't a rant
so
at all.
So obviously tongue-in-cheek, half of it.
Yeah.
Like the idea you can just present these things in writing as they do every time. Is outrageous, you know.
But you know, like, say the luminosity joke.
Sure.
Like, do you regret it? That was going to be the thrust of the question.
Here's an interesting fact that nobody ever brings up, Richard, because nobody cares about the facts.
Okay.
I publicly apologized in the Portuguese language something like 1 hour after that tweet.
Mm.
Right? I don't know where you live, Richard, but the world that I live in, if you say something and you didn't think it through properly, and it's come off in a manner, especially like that, where it's been taken in a manner you definitely didn't intend it. If you then say, you know what, I apologize for that. It's not what I intended. Sorry. That's the end of it. They don't then go, sorry, we're going to be bringing you up every year for parole for this comment you made, and we're going to ignore your apology. You will be retried for the same offense over and over again, and we will constantly link the first offense while never even mentioning the existence of the second. Like, think about it. How could you get to that story, find it all, and then somehow miss the last detail?
Yeah, but again, you know, and I understand that. So again, it sort of branches off into two questions at this point. So one question, and this is actually sort of loaded into the premise of the article, is can you ever apologize for something?
Then it's a ridiculous world we live in, quite frankly, because it's not just the case that like
that's bad phraseology. Are there some things that an apology is not sufficient for?
Yeah, probably like genocide, killing lots of people, maybe torturing someone, really high levels of abuse. Even then, I think rehabilitation is probably possible. Don't think anything I've done comes even vaguely close to that depth of behavior, quite frankly, though.
And again, it's sort of to come back to the main question, you know, like if regret, because I think this is important, right? Like there's this perception about you in particular. That, you know, they even loaded it into the article, right? That where they were saying, oh, and he even referenced it in his speech, which absolutely did not happen. That definitely never happened. I mean, they said the same thing about me. They said I referenced the Loader incident by making a joke about Crime Watch. No, I made the joke about Crime Watch because I'm from a very poor background where my family is pretty much divided into ex-military and criminals, and I would probably have gone down one of those two routes. Myself, there was a good chance I probably would have been involved with some crime at some point in my life because of the background that I'm
from. It's funny, you know, Richard, how that part somehow intersectionality divides every possible race, creed, gender, background into different squares, right? Which all have their different levels of oppression. But we were never oppressed as poor, well, British people coming from backgrounds where we had poor education, very limited opportunities. Somehow, none of our life circumstances can ever be built into the context of how we behave and what happens in our lives, right?
Yeah,
we're treated as though we came out of a vacuum, a perfect, presumably in their mind, specimen of people who were just white, because they just always make the category like that. You know, there's no differentiation, and therefore it's almost like, you know, we had the choice of saying anything, and we just decided to do these, in their mind, horrible things. There's no context ever, is there?
Yeah, it always sours it for me because it's like, you know, I feel proud of the fact that maybe I shouldn't, I don't know, but I did work hard and I managed to take a hobby effectively and turn it into a living, and I managed to excel within that space. Yeah. And I went from being on a council estate to being on American national television. Not a lot of people are going to get to do that. I think that's an achievement. I didn't feel that any step along the way I had anybody sort of extending their hand. Like every day was a fight, a battle. That's one of the reasons why I'm so brash and blunt now. When people, it's very hard to lose that instinct when you've had to fight.
Here's the thing, what you were saying there, where people are under the impression that I don't have any more remorse, right? The problem with that is they just haven't done any research. Mm. Like, first of all, when have I ever referenced it as though like it was a brilliant thing that I did in any of these instances?
No, I know that.
Never happened. And in every instance, like, for example, so the Polish one, do you think the person who wrote that article read that Facebook post I wrote about the whole issue where I broke down the entire thing? Nah, possible. Well, how am I supposed to express remorse if I hand you a book saying, here are my regrets, and you go, not interested in reading that?
So yeah, okay, but it still comes down to it. I mean, again, if you could go back and, like, let's say not make that tweet, would if you had that option, would you?
The funny thing is, the tweet is the only one I've ever actually written a genuine like apology of, where I think it was actually the wrong thing to do, mainly because the way I phrased the tweet, and I only realized this afterwards when people were responding. And by the way, I'm not saying like all the Brazilian fans, because obviously a lot of those people hated me, which is actually the cycle that began all that in the first place. Ignoring that, I'm talking about when other people in the industry who had nothing to do with it responded. And I quickly realized they actually legitimately thought it was some sort of racial tweet. Whereas the whole point of my joke there was actually just playing off the fact that it's HLTV.org that always call these people that particular thing. And so I just connected the two. Now, it's not really an amazing joke. It's a throwaway comment, isn't it? And I also definitely regret the fact that if I'd have done that, I probably should have, like, I don't know how you would do this on Twitter, but I do definitely regret replying to Smix there, because also, even though this has nothing to do with it, people did imply somehow like she was setting me up for the joke or something. No, in no way. She had no clue about that whatsoever. She in no way implied that Luminosity were monkeys in any sense whatsoever. Remember, I had said the word Luminosity. She didn't even say that. So how could she possibly be included in something I later said?
Yeah. And so I think that's the key thing. Like, you know, why people will continually go after you is, again, it's like you say, I think there's a perception that there is no remorse, regret, or revision.
Thing is, I don't buy that they actually believe that, though. Like, I could believe
them. I honestly think they do.
Okay, I could believe the most casual people do, right? The ones who are just hearing this second, third, fourth hand. I don't think the people making these claims ever think that. I think they actively despise me and they work, reverse engineer an opinion from that to make that work. And it's actually something I've noticed in general in life, right? People will do this with their friends. Like, if you're in a little clique, a little group of people, right? And it's not just like a three or four person clique. It's, you know, it's a bigger one, like 10, 15 people. What will happen is when one of them falls out with another one in the group, they can't just tell you why they fell out with them. Because if they fell out with them, it's probably very subjective to them what's pissed them off. And if you heard that, you'd probably at worst just think, well, I'm not involved, so I'm just going to keep out of it, right? What they'll tend to do is they will try to think, right, I want to create in the other person the same feeling I have towards the person who's annoyed me so that they also dislike them. And usually the tool to do that is to lie, to exaggerate, to like purposely, disingenuously leave a gap where the person can draw a conclusion, you know, didn't happen, because you just want them to have the engender the same feeling in them that you have. So in this scenario, I think what happens is there's a lot of people are really pissed off that they don't like me. And perhaps they do think I'm racist, who knows, but they don't really have any good evidence for it. So what they do is they go, right, what can I do with this to sex it up and make it look really bad so that other people who don't really know the person, and ideally the ones who won't look into it, will go, no, you're right, this is a really terrible, but you are absolutely justified in all your behavior towards this guy because he's terrible, isn't he?
It's just a weird one. I will say this, like I am more than capable of like self-reflection, you know, and like if somebody said something to me and it was from a source I respected, I'd go away and I'd ponder on it, and I often ponder on my own behavior anyway, you know, like I know sometimes when I lash out or I have a quick temper, I'll come back and I'll be like, yeah, probably shouldn't have done that, you know, and try and mend fences.
Okay, but wait a second. When you say that though, Richard, right, here's the difference. I have no problem whatsoever apologizing to the Luminosity players, especially when I actually talked to them and found out how they interpreted it. And it was definitely something I wanted to make very clear. That's not in any way what I implied. But one thing I do not agree with, and this is probably, maybe this gets to the crux of it, this is why people think I don't have remorse. I definitely don't think I owe 7 billion people a personal apology each and a re-explanation every time they demand it of what I might have said and why and how I justify. No, I don't owe all these people anything.
No, and I think we're definitely in agreement on that. It's like, at what point do you get to put it away? And again, coming back to the central premise of the article is that these things that happened years ago must continually be brought up as we move forward and as esports evolves. We must always go back and revisit these incidents, which everyone else is quite keen to move on from. DreamHack didn't give comment, right? Credit to them. They didn't indulge any stuff about me. ESL didn't comment on you. Valve didn't comment. Nobody commented because it's like we in the esports community are keen to move on. Were any of these situations ideal? No, obviously not. Are any of these situations likely to happen again? Of course not. We've all learned from them. And for me, I don't think, and certainly in my situation, I don't think it's fair to keep bringing them up just because you're new to esports and you've discovered who I am.
Yeah, that is usually where it all comes from, right? It's a new guy comes in and says, what's this I've heard? And then they react. The problem is, though, like, I don't really think anything in the past in that scenario has to be. But look, I mean, here's the obvious cynical answer. They have to bring it up because there's nothing recent, is there?
Well,
if there was any, here's the thing. If we actually were terrible people, Rich, it'd be all over our Twitter every day. There'd be pieces in our work that were like, ooh, what's the implication there? You know, like they can't find any of this stuff. So they have to go with old shit from 3 years ago.
Yeah, and look, again, you know, it's like I say, I think I already fucking paid the piper for my transgressions, you know.
We all did, mate. Like
the Reddit ban stifled,
sure,
you know, my growth on YouTube and everything else led to the fact that I can't defend myself on that platform, has led to some absolutely outrageous lies being spread about me on that platform, which I've just got to suck up and deal with. And for the Loader thing, as I said, it severed a relationship with people that were my friends, a company I had come up with, the company that gave me my first ever on-camera hosting job. That is a bitter pill to swallow. And what more do you want?
Isn't that the point, though, right? Is that, think about this, you have literally been punished, in some cases, above and beyond what would happen. Same scenario happened to me. But, like, for example, I lost an entire job that I was salaried for over a tweet, which also was a joke, by the way, but they never mentioned that. Now, in this scenario, that exactly gets to the crux of it, doesn't it? It is never enough. At any moment, in fact, here's what it really is. It's a shock collar for me and you. If we ever do or say anything else that these people don't like, it might even just be like criticize them for something. They can always at any moment pull up the shock collar, press the button, and we get electrocuted for something that happened 3 years ago. And now the court of public opinion starts up again. We're supposed to present our lawyers. Doesn't matter if we have videos that explain it all. No, you're supposed to explain it again now. And apparently that's demanded of you. And the whole circus just starts up again.
Yeah. And that's what I mean. It's like, all right, we get it. You know, look, I'll say it for myself. If you consider these things fuck ups, I'm happy to own them and say they're fuck ups. I've said they're fuck ups. I've tried to do everything I can to just sort of get on, you know. Since then, I've took a job that I've been vetted for. You know, I work for a big American media corporation. It has its own set of responsibilities. You know, I'm the face of their esports output. It's a lot of responsibility. It's a lot of stress. I think anybody who looks at my Twitter feed knows that it's a lot tamer than it fucking used to be. I retain independence on my YouTube and podcasts like this and on my website. But even then, everything I do is a lot more measured. The stakes are a lot higher. You know, I get that. It's not fucking lost on me. At what point do I get to get on with my life? You know, it's not like anything I did hurt anybody, by the way. The implication being from the opening paragraph of that article that I'm a racist or a transphobe or a absolutely outrageous slander, which could never be proven. You'll never find anyone that will say those things about me outside of unless they are very disturbed individuals, because there's just no evidence to point to this. But it's like you say, I never get to get off the ride, do I? Every day I got to get up and go to work and do my thing, and then I can get pulled into a room and be like, there's a new article bringing up the shit from 3 years ago, 4 years ago, 5 years ago. It's like they're going to keep putting it out there until somebody important enough sees it and decides, oh, fuck it, I've had enough. I'm sick and tired of reading about it. So we just won't work with him anymore.
I think you've got the point exactly. Just as with them, they're not trying to talk to you or me. There's no dialogue happening here. They are just trying to use us as a prop to talk about terrible things in gaming, and we're just the sort of cipher through which they are going to express these ideas, right? Well, just as they're trying to just convince the people reading, that's the only person I'd talk to around this topic. Like, I wouldn't have a discussion with this individual who wrote the article. Seemed like a piece of shit, quite frankly. What I would say, though, is other people out there expect this sort of stuff to happen, and this is the way the game is played, unfortunately, nowadays. And so you have to realize that, unfortunately, probably the only thing that actually annoys me legitimately is that people who defend us will then get attacked. And like, for example, as is always the case with social justice warriors, by the way, if you want to see how much they respect women, try finding a woman who disagrees with their opinion. Suddenly you could just replace their name and think that they were the worst misogynist in the world. They'll tell the woman how they aren't even her own thoughts. She just thinks this because of oppression. You know, she's like, just the best one is to imply she benefits, you know, either she's in a sexual relationship or financial relationship, or she's just actually oppressing other women by not coming and agreeing with them. If you want to see the way they actually, you know, their real moral fiber, just look when people who they claim to be defending basically tell them they're wrong. They go nuts. So while on one hand, I would say I feel bad when people I like and respect get attacked, I can't feel bad in the sense that I regret it, because actually I'm not the one making them get attacked. Sadly, it's these individuals who come in and are actively choosing, apropos of nothing, to just attack people and then even attack the people who defend them. You know, that's someone else's negative bag, unfortunately, not mine.
So just to wrap it up, we're different. You know, I can understand the resentment about this piece, but I've already reached PC Games and contacted me. But what I want to do is, I don't even necessarily want to talk to the publication. I'm happy to talk to the author. Hell, I'll take her to any esports event she wants to go to, and she can come and meet the real esports side of things, because I think this article was written from a place of you know, trying to be as nice about it as possible, but a place of ignorance. I don't think she knows the esports that we know, and I think if she got to know the esports that we know and kind of where we're positioned within it, I think she would have a very different opinion than the one that informed the piece she wrote. Plus, as well, I'm a journalist. You occasionally get commissioned to do pieces that don't even necessarily reflect your views, but the editor wants them. It's not clear to me if she even necessarily believes what's written down there, or whether it was meant to be a primer for something that the publication wants to represent. So I'd like to talk to the author. But, you know, I've done it many a time. A lot of people I've met in the esports industry are people that started with an entirely negative perception about me, and I went out of my way to get to know them.
I don't think anything on this level, though.
Well, one or two.
Calling you transphobic's pretty, pretty swear, mate. In any normal setting, that's the lawsuit all day.
You know, I don't know, because they don't directly say that. I mean, that's a separate issue. It's an opinion piece. It's protected speech.
Sure.
She's perfectly entitled to write that. And the factual inaccuracies that are there would not be damaging enough to my reputation to warrant any form of action.
Unfortunately, so. It's not. Yeah, that's your point. You're not going to get fired over it. There's not going to be no monetary loss.
Well, and not even that. I don't even think it even necessarily damages my reputation. I mean, the article got an overwhelmingly negative response in the end. And, you know, it probably makes the publication look a little bit silly. But, yeah, it was just, I don't know, dude. It was just, it was just a weird one. And I don't know, they'll probably watch this podcast. I mean, that's the other thing I will say. Definitely, I'm going to probably, I'm worried now that they're going to start clipping stuff from like YouTube videos from like years ago. And it's like, what's the follow up to this? That's what I'm worried about. So,
well, one thing we know they won't do is, as I've mentioned, go watch any of the videos where you explain all the context, Facebook posts where I do these. Because remember, these people aren't actually journalists. Like, they're not interested in journalism.
So anyway, look, I've made you suitably salty to talk about the blast. So this is good. This is where it's going to get heated. Now, unfortunately,
well, here's the good thing, Richard. Even though we didn't have Anders here, obviously, and he was going to be the big Kirby-esque motherfucker trying to absorb the heat for the blast, as it were. You know, I think I can actually play that role pretty well, because I have to say, lots of the stuff I've seen that were criticisms of the event, I thought were pretty unfounded, you know. But I'll definitely not someone who's like 100% on the blast side and think I did nothing wrong. So I think I'm probably in a pretty good middle ground position.
Yeah. So, well, look, Anders isn't coming, unfortunately. We did want to set it up, but Refresh was so terrified about what he might say if he was co-opted. They basically just destroyed all the internet cables in his like small Danish village wherever he lives. So he's not going to be here, but we will get him on the show, maybe even the next show, just to pick his brains in generalities. But it's going to be me and Duncan breaking down the blast. So first of all, like I said on yesterday's podcast, I honestly think it's one of the most disastrous events of 2017. And I was very perplexed by the overall talent reaction and the player reaction from players who attended it, because I always thought the rule of thumb was that it doesn't matter how well you treat people, at the end of the day, you've got to deliver the event. Well, it seemed to be a very different sort of criteria here. So,
okay, so wait, break that down then. What do you mean by that then? Like, what is it about the reaction that, what was lacking? What was absent that surprised you?
So I think what surprised me is, okay, so it's not what was absent, it's more just what was there. And it was, hang on, are we talking about the event or the reaction from players?
The reaction rather. Yes. But like, what is it about our reaction that was surprising to you?
Yeah, so the reaction I think was like, for example, let me get this for Sam. I did put it to one side, or maybe Sam can find it while we're talking. There was a group of tweets from all the players. If you want to just bring that up to sort of demonstrate it. Like, so first of all, when the players sort of came out after day one, which as I said, it's criminal in a two-day event to have your first day cancelled. I was amazed that anybody was sort of justifying this, because players' time was wasted. And I tweeted out, you know, when you've got players who are like, I will wear the hats, even if it like ruins fucking competitive integrity, and I can hear what casters are saying, and people are going to accuse me of cheating, and maybe I am cheating. To come out and to have an entire day wasted and then go, give the blast a bloody chance. I thought that was very strange. And then when I saw talent, like usually the default thing when you're working an event, what's professional is if it's having all these problems, you just don't say anything. But you don't necessarily have to go out and bat for them because it's just a freelance paycheck. They're not your employers. But I did see a lot of the talent sort of come out and be like, trust me, we're going to blow the doors off tomorrow. It's going to be amazing. Almost like, again, protestations that you couldn't necessarily guarantee. And I'd never seen
that. Do you want a response to that then?
Yeah, yeah, absolutely. That's right.
So first of all, I'm not a player, so I can't literally speak from the player's perspective, but I will say for the players, right, I definitely agree with what you're saying there. Some of them just went too far with it. Like their approach wasn't just like, oh, you know, let's give them a chance or let's wait. Some of them were almost like, oh, don't criticize them or whatever. Like, yeah, obviously that's ridiculous. And quite frankly, I just put that down to them being A, inexperienced with like political drama, and be young people. And so sadly, this is something actually, funnily enough, you'll see this every now and then in scenarios like the ones we were just talking about with me and you on Twitter. You'll get someone who's a very well-meaning pro player who's like 20 years old. And because they like us and are friends with us, they'll be like, oh, they never even did anything wrong. And you're like, well, come on, mate. Even I acknowledge that I shouldn't have done that. You know, like you've gone too far with it, haven't you? I get what you're trying to say. You're trying to communicate. These are good guys, actually. Like, let's give them a chance. Like, I realize it looks bad, but let's wait, you know? And they've just over-egged the pudding, haven't they? They've gone a bit too far and they've implied too much. So on the player side, yeah, I can totally see that. And yes, in the context of how players behave at other events where they've gone mental at ESL for not having like a desk be the right height or whatever, yes, in their scenario, I agree there's something very absent there, which is how ludicrously like unbalanced their comment towards the blast was, regardless of how nice the hotel rooms are and the treatment was and how close to the venue you were. You know, all these factors shouldn't really have tempered that if you're going to go as ham on the ESL scenario. Like that's, the players made their own bed on that one. I think they have to accept that they've fucked up on that and they've just shown themselves as biased in some senses, even if I get in isolation in this case why they wanted to give a better chance. But in terms of the talent, this is an area I feel like is actually really unfairly critiqued, because what do you think one of the reasons I might have a really good idea that the blast would succeed on day two? By the way, it absolutely did. You know the reason why that was? Because before the whole show, they came and showed me the whole setup, and they showed me what the stage looked like, and they showed me some of the innovations they'd made, and they showed me all these factors. And the one thing that stopped the event going as it should have was very, very simple technical issues. And being someone behind the scenes, I happen to know that was one or two people massively fucking up their job to a level that the higher up could not possibly have known. Like, I'll give you an example, Rich, right? So Echo Fox in 2016 had one of the shittest League of Legends teams ever, dollar for dollar, one of the shittest CSGO teams ever, dollar for dollar. Do you say, Rick Fox, you were a piece of shit. You didn't know what you were doing. Do you know why you wouldn't, Rich? Because he didn't do any of that. He made a mistake hiring the wrong people who he was informed were good and passed all the interviews, and then they made a few key fuck-ups. And yes, he has to carry the can for that, and he has to apologize for it all in the end and tell his fans, I'll take it on the chin that I'm the top dog, it's my fault. But deep down, it's not really entirely his fault. He's inexperienced and he made the wrong call. Same thing happened with the blast. And by the way, Anders wouldn't tell you this. There were people involved with the technical hitches in this. Only one or two people who fucked up on such a massive level that they made it almost irreparable on day one. It was definitely going to be fixed by day two if you knew how simple these problems were. But I don't necessarily blame the higher-ups at the blast. Like, some of these people had tenure in esports, had good reps. Like, I might have made the mistake if someone had asked me, should I hire this guy? Yeah, he seems like he knows what he's doing. That's a big part of it. And so I knew behind the scenes things people didn't know who were watching on TV, and we thought, well, why wouldn't it just be day one all over again? Well, if you knew some of the simple details that had to be fixed, it wasn't going to be day one again, and it wasn't.
So how do you feel about the idea of ownership then? Because, you know, for example, ESL take a lot of heat, right? When their events are kind of subpar in this production.
So fair play to ESL. They used to sort of go, well, it's not, in fact, they used to do exactly worse than this, Rich. Well, it's not my fault. There's something wrong with the server. But it was controlling the server. None of your business, Windows, you know.
Yeah,
they have learned. Now I agree. They've learned to accept responsibility. Yeah.
So that's my point, though. It's like, you know, where does the buck stop for you? Like, should... You know, like, is it fair to say, like, fuck you
at the top, but if I have a factory and the factory produces food and some of the food ends up coming out poisoned, I do have to accept responsibility as the factory owner. Doesn't mean I'm the one who poisoned it, though. We can all concede the two scenarios.
Okay, that's good. I get that. So look, so there was that. Then there was obviously, like I say, you know, really poor communication on day one as well. I was kind of trying to get the games, trying to watch the games. Sure. There was loads of people who were like, you know, sitting around 4 hours, people setting alarms, getting up. And then it was just like this weird sort of, it's going to be 5-10 minutes. No, it's going to be an hour, but then, and then it's another five, 10 minutes. Then, we're gonna just play one set of games. Then we're gonna cancel the games. And this drip feed of information basically made that. And this is what I mean. I wasn't at the event, so I care about the viewers at home primarily in this critique. I understand that it was a great live event. We'll get to that in a second. You know, which one should have been prioritized, but I think when you basically waste like 4 hours of people's lives promising them something that you don't deliver, it's almost kind of like a meh, we're sorry, we'll just play the games tomorrow and it'll be loads better. I kind of feel that isn't good enough.
What should you do then? What would be an appropriate penance?
Yeah, it ties into what we were talking about earlier. What would be, it's not necessarily about a penance. It just felt that there wasn't anything forthcoming, and maybe there is something that they could do. I don't know what Refresh could have offered people whose time had been
probably
wasted.
Full refund,
yeah, which would have been exactly sweet.
No, I agree. Listen, I totally get it. The viewer, you're sitting there and you're like, where the fuck's the games? Yeah, that sucks. I will say, by the way, it isn't even that Refresh failed to communicate to the outside world. That was everyone, including Refresh, who were on the same drip feed. Because, here's the very simple version that everyone must surely have figured out by now. The servers didn't work. Now, how hard is it to run a fucking server? Not hard. But if you're an idiot, it could be incredibly hard. And you could run through every possible solution and then you could find out none of them with a solution. And the problem is, if you've ever tried setting up a computer and you don't know what you're doing, trying things haphazardly doesn't fix the problem. You need to bring in a guy who goes, this is the problem, there's a solution, 10 minutes, I've done it, we're going. So what happened was, I'm very well aware it was 4 hours, mate. I was stood there talking the whole time and people were in Semler's ear the whole time. 5 minutes more, game going live. Okay, back it out, back, Phil. Like that, you know, four hours.
I felt sorry for you guys. They legitimately did.
Yeah, it was mental. So here's the thing. First of all, by the way, I would add that in as context for people who are viewers. Think about it from the talent's perspective, right? When you say the whole event's shit, yeah, I know you mean the games weren't on and there was problems.
Right.
Talent, they just filled for 4 hours and you guys are like, fuck you, you're supposed to tell them to go kill themselves. Like, I've just been trying to do my best to give you a show for 4 hours. Like, I agree. I hope they can run the servers better and they fire you know who and hire people who know what the fuck they're doing, like running a server. Yeah, I get all that. But the whole reason why they kept delaying it is because they kept thinking it was going live in 10 minutes. Like, as I said, running a server is not rocket science, but if you really fuck up everything and all your equipment, it will be rocket science, you know.
Yeah, and I think, you know, you're right. I think to a certain degree, in that sense, I suppose it's not good to see somebody like me tweeting stuff while you guys are.
No, here's the thing, okay, Richard. This is actually one of those areas where, thanks to having been involved in a lot of areas of esports, I think I actually have a very reasonable perspective on it, which is this. First of all, I've never said people shouldn't criticize the Blast. If you're at home, criticize them based on your experience. Sure, that's fine. And if you at home, in your case, Richard, you should criticize them because here's my ideal scenario. Are you ready? This is a scenario that people like Social Justice Moritz might not be able to get their head around. It's actually good when you criticize an event, Richard, working for E-League, that isn't E-League, but don't criticize E-League because you are not in a position where you can criticize E-League, but you can criticize every other event. Now, if I don't work for E-League and I criticize E-League's problems, but I can't criticize the Blast in the same way because I'm working for them, eventually all the right people are critiquing all the people who need to be critiqued and we're all still getting hired and working for them. That's actually the perfect compromise, is it not? Like, I would never go back at Scoots when he goes off on him. I get it. He's on point on some of it.
I get it, man. And you're right. You know, it's I think somewhere along the line, what originally was like fair critique did become this weird pissing contest. And it's kind of strange, actually, because even though I work for E-League, you know, I do. When I always feel a bit squeamish about criticizing other events, which I do as a fan. You know, I don't speak for E-League when I do that. I don't, but equally, I don't like the idea of extending silence as a professional courtesy because I just, I, you know, I wanted a great event. I wanted to grate the blast. You know, whatever you say about refreshing their conflict of interests with multiple team ownership, it's got nothing to do with these events that they're running. Whatever you say about, you know, them inviting teams that they own to an event that they run, sure. These are all separate issues. And I've been going to Danish events for years, and I love the Danish fucking scene. And the Blast is an old school name that's been resurrected. I had all that excitement that I'm sure a lot of fans did too. So, so anyway, there was that. Then I think the other issue was on day two. Some of the streams at home. I don't know if you guys were aware of this.
One of them was broken.
There was one stream.
It was in particular, the Phase G2 game on Mirage. Yeah, it was utterly fucked.
Yeah, it was like 3D, but without the 3D glasses.
Yeah, it looked like Predator Vision, right? It was just like all green and fucked. Yeah.
Yeah. And that didn't seem to get fixed for ages, if at all. I don't even know if it did in the end.
I mean, I believe it did, but first of all, on that one, like, yeah, that's an obvious fuck-up fight. That's one area where I wouldn't defend the Blast. If you've never run a tournament before, no matter who you've hired, by the way, they did hire people who'd run tournaments before. If you've never run a tournament before, trying to run three games at once, you can see where the problems could come in. Because then what happens if one of your games is fucked, the other two are working, and you've got all the people working on the other two, and you've maybe got a small crew on the other third? You're going to be in trouble, aren't you? I would absolutely say they've got to take that one on the chin. There's no excuse.
Yeah. Right. And that's fair. And, you know, a lot of people were sort of bringing it up. And again, communication really lacking, not a lot of information forthcoming. So then here's the other thing that I didn't like at all, the fucking format. Now, let me tell you where this accelerated three games at a time format would work. It would work at a tournament where you've got like 16 teams.
Yes, absolutely. Yes. It's the same thing I said. Yeah.
Yeah. Right. That would be fucking great, because nobody wants to have to, like, bloody hell, it's CLG versus the Mongols. Like, fuck, get me out. Like, you know
what
I mean?
Well, that's the ultimate irony, isn't it, Rich? Is that they actually fucked themselves on the format by getting too good a team list. They had like six of the top seven teams in the world and then made people choose between the games. And so while I don't think that format's necessarily fully played, like, I'd have to see what the viewing figures would have been if all the three streams worked. Maybe you'd get more because people who maybe don't care about one of the games wouldn't have tuned out. I don't know how it would work. You know, I'd have to see the logistics. But I agree, that's a format which wouldn't have had the same criticism if it had had the really bad teams where, for example, people like me who are known elitists, I don't want to watch Envious Player Mongols. I would never watch that game unless I was having that fucking treatment out of Clockwork Orange. What was that called? That process? Something begins F, doesn't it?
Yeah, I don't even know.
You know what I'm talking about.
Yeah, you're right.
That, the only scenario I would willingly watch that game. So if I could switch over, great.
And like I say, it was a great premise. But the thing is, you invite all these sick fucking teams. And every game is sick and significant within the way the format works. And then this wasn't the tournament for this format at all. All of these games should have been queued up. And like I said, by the time it got to the final, there were some people who didn't even fucking know, like, who's going to be in it? Like, it was super hard to follow because you were like waiting on games.
You actually had to wait on the last game. You had to wait to see what happened to both. I think it was Astralis and... Was Astralis? Who was FaZe playing? I think FaZe was maybe playing. Were they playing North? Anyway, two people were playing games where, like, basically, it depended on who won and who lost.
You're right. Yeah.
And that decided who went to the final. So actually, what happened, funnily enough, was I believe it was actually even a tied game for FaZe, but they couldn't have known at the time that it didn't matter. Maybe they were playing Astralis, actually. I think that they had already technically been eliminated because their game was still live. They couldn't have known it and were probably playing thinking, if we're in this game, we're in, but you weren't anyway. Which, sadly, by the way, you could have at least given us the hilarious moment where they realized that they're not in after the ball got off. Like, yeah, we made it. Team power. Could at least have that moment, you know? Like, you know that classic moment in League of Legends from 2015, when they did the group draw and Reginald and Loco are watching it live. And so they think they've got the easy group and they're like, yes, sick. And then someone informs like, but actually you get put in group D, which is the group of death. And then the look on their faces is pure. Like, you just lap it up. And
it's too good. But yeah, so I think at a bigger tournament, if Refresh the Blast do decide to do bigger scale tournaments, this format could be a great thing. But this wasn't the one. A lot of people kind of felt cheated because they couldn't watch some absolutely sick games. Or you were very often in a position where you had to choose between two sick games. Like, there might have been one that was provably in third place. But as I said, I went back and watched the VODs for all of the games because it was like, these are fucking all top 10 teams playing each other, you know? So there was that. And then I think just overall, there was lots of like just little things like lots of errors with the HUD and the way they did it wrong. They did the transitions the wrong way around, in my opinion, where it was like it started big. So it was like Astralis win and then it shrank down. But you would miss the start of the round. So you would miss like key information like buying who might be playing off a spawn and it would shrink down. Sometimes it would fuck up and not shrink at all. So you would just literally have a giant monstrosity. So there was lots of like just little glitches like that that sort of impaired my thing. But here's the thing. So it sounds like I've all been a negative, purely negative about it. You know, I thought day one was a fucking write-off and everybody should be embarrassed. I haven't seen a tournament have to cancel an entire day.
By the way, you might like this, because I was just checking now what my tweets at the event were to see if I said anything that people might think was unreasonable. What's funny is I actually found a tweet, you'll like this, when they announced the tournament. It was from July 17th of this year. It said, I wonder if we'll see the same level of complaints from pros on Twitter at the Blast refresh or Epicenter ES Force Tonys, because obviously this was during, I can't remember what Tony would be, 17th of July, maybe ECS or something. I think maybe ECS, yeah. Obviously, that is an area where I entirely get why people in the public are a bit pissed off, because if you don't know the circumstances, it looks massively hypocritical the way people treat each different tournament, you know?
Yeah. It's true. There's definitely something in it. But yeah, so to talk about what was good, obviously they hired all the right people for it. It's interesting, actually. Nicola Nyholm despises me because I've always pointed out this conflict of interest stuff with Refresh. And, you know, if they'd offered me, but he says he thinks I'm a very good desk host. If he'd offered me to come and do the event, which I would have had to decline anyway, I think, but maybe not. I wouldn't have took it anyway because I don't want to take money from these companies until they get their fucking houses in order and they're not fucking up esports. But they hired all of the right talent besides that. I thought everybody did a great job. Even people like Semler were put into positions they're very unfamiliar in. And it was great to see all of you guys. You know, it was great to see the dream team, maybe bar one or two names, you know, be out there. So that was good. I thought their ability to sell out that stadium. And I've said this a lot. It's an underrated skill in esports to be able to fill a venue, to get whatever it was between 10 and 12,000 people in that stadium is a fucking achievement in and of itself.
Which I also think might be part of the reason why they made the flaw with the format. Because remember, there's two things going on in their head. One, if you can have a unique format, everyone wants one because they want to set their event apart and be like, this is the way we're doing it, you know. So unfortunately, that can already suck you into the trap of realizing, oh, I've got a unique format. Yeah, well, there's a reason why no one uses that one, mate. It's just not as good. But secondly, they wanted a format where they could run it all. Remember, first day wasn't in the stadium anyway. We were just like, it was just us and a bunch of business people. You know, there was no crowd. Yeah. So they only ever were going to fill the stadium for one day. Now, again, this is an area where people who are outsiders, you just have to bow and realize you don't know anything about business. I don't. I have no clue how much more it costs to have a stadium for 2 days or if people will buy 2 days of tickets. And for example, one day was a Sunday. Would it have to have been a Saturday and a Sunday? Can a Sunday and a Monday even work? You know, there's all these logistics which you have to just bow your head and go, unless you're an expert in these areas, it's almost impossible to know, right?
Yeah. Yeah. And you know, look, and absolutely, I will say this. They clearly prioritized the live show over the home show.
Okay.
You know, I mean, clearly everything about it is set up to be for the people in the stadium. They prioritized that. And that's fine. You know, they put on a great live event. I didn't find one person who went criticized their in-stadium experience. Not one thread on Reddit, not one tweet. Nobody contacted me. In fact, quite the opposite. A few people contacted me to say, hey, if you're going to do the Blast special, I went, I attended. It was fucking amazing. And their ability to fill out that stadium actually proves something that I have said for many, many years. I used to know a lot of business people over in Denmark who were involved in esports, and they used to say, we simply cannot get big sponsors attached to Danish events because our population is so small. You know, they got like 5.5 million people in Denmark. And because of that, the marketing budget for that region is incredibly small, right? Like, so And people don't want to throw away money on esports, which they consider a low ROI. But in terms of engagement, that is one of the most engaged regions I have seen. That is a region with some of the most passionate fans in the world. Every event I've ever gone to in Denmark, even small little lands in the middle of nowhere, have just hundreds, if not thousands, of people attending, people spending money, people understanding the scene. And to fill that stadium, it shows that Denmark, for me, is one of the premier countries in esports right now, no doubt. Passionate fans, people need to start spending their money in that region and tapping into that. So I thought that was great. And again, just in terms of the stage and everything, awesome, amazing stuff. And of course, the final delivered. They had that weird third, fourth place playoff thing where it was like an AIM duel and no one knew what the fuck was going on. That's terrible. Never do that again.
Unfortunately, I think the logic there was it's something to sort of keep the crowd vaguely into it while you set up for the final. So it's obviously just a bad compromise. Like, I agree, it was terrible. Even as a premise, it's the sort of thing where you could have just told the person, like, no matter how you think that's going to work out, Miko, it's not. Just don't do it.
So, I mean, it reminded me a lot of when we did that Nuke show match at MLG.
Yes.
And it was like the players weren't into it. The map wasn't great. It wasn't optimized. And we ended up doing a tri-cast with Red Eye from nowhere. And it's like a tri-cast that you've got to have chemistry and experience. And it was like, I was going to tap out, but then I didn't want to disappoint people. Certainly not MLG. Have always been great for us. But it's certainly not anything I've ever wanted to go back. I bet it was horrible. But anyway, so I guess just in terms of structure of the event and everything else, just some final thoughts from you, who obviously went there and wanted to make a case for it. Because I know Anders was heavily involved in the planning and everything, and I didn't want to shit on the event on that basis. But equally, that would make me a biased motherfucker if I did that. So I just wanted to express my feelings. I think all told, it gets out of jail by the fact the final was great and the stadium and atmosphere was great. I think everything else from an online home perspective, it was like 2007 levels. Like, they've completely got to raise their game in catering to the home audience or admit they don't care about that. One of the two.
Sure. I mean, I would just say, yeah, I think they've clearly made some big mistakes. I think it's a positive also that apparently it hasn't just killed the project. Apparently they're going to do like four events next year or something, and possibility to do it in different countries. All sounds great. The people behind it seemed very earnest. Some of them actually are people who've been involved in esports a long time. I mean, I don't know why people do that, where it's like you're not allowed to ever have anyone involved who's like new. Like, well, how are you ever supposed to get more money and bigger scale production stuff into the scene? You know, you have to welcome in the new people, and yeah, they have to learn from their mistakes. Certainly. I do think though that, like, I just don't understand. Like, I did feel like the reaction to talent's comments were the worst ones. Like, cause people implied as though everyone was just a shill. And the worst, probably, if you've noticed, I hate conspiracy theories that just have no basis to them at all. Blast players all together. Paid. Yeah, exactly. Yeah. And told us all, you know, you're going to tweet this out now. That's the worst part about that implication is, first of all, you're just essentially alleging that a whole bunch of people are all pieces of shit who don't have any opinion of their own. And then secondly, there's no world in which you can conceive of a possibility someone could have just arrived at that opinion on their own. That's ridiculous. I mean, I'll tell you, I gave people the example of the player case, where players have been to events that had bad tables and players have been to events where they're like, where's the shuttle? Oh, there is no shuttle. I have to make my own way in a country where I don't speak the language to the hotel. Or players have been in scenarios where they had problems getting through the customs and then there was no guy there to explain, oh, actually, he's here for this week. You know, they've had all these issues throughout their lives. They come to an event where it was above and beyond anything I have ever experienced. Like, the way someone was there for you and then took you places and then gave you lovely things and had a great hotel set up and gave you a full list of literally to the minute of here's where you'll need to be and what you'll do and when the rehearsal is and what you'll do after that. Like, nowadays, even in modern esports massive events, you arrive on rehearsal day and then you sit in a lobby, go, when's the rehearsal? They go, no word yet, maybe in a few hours. That's massive tournaments. These are people sponsored for millions of dollars, and they're still doing that. And they've worked in esports 15 years. Oh, shit, I've given away, isn't it? No, all of them, by the way, are like that. So don't worry about it. And so in this scenario, when you then come to an event, oh, by the way, it's a joke, wasn't it? Nah, don't worry. Can you leave that in? It was supposed to be bawdy, obviously, wasn't it?
Just checking.
So and then from my own perspective, I went to an event this year, Richard, where when I was sat in the green room, someone from the event explained to me that he despises me and doesn't think I should be hired for these events, but was hired, some higher up forced him to, and that he hopes all other events fail so they don't have to pay divas like me as much money as they're paying me. Oh, by the way, welcome to our country. It's like, fuck you, slow motherfucker. Like, and then guess what? When someone actually treats you with some respect and you've seen that one moron in their company fucked up the whole thing for everyone else, you go, hey, let's see how tomorrow is. I think it would be better personally. No promises, which is about what I tweeted pretty much.
Yeah. Overall, I mean, like, did you get a good vibe? Like, here's what I would like. Here's what I would really, really like. I would like refresh, because what you got to know is, like, I understand what Nicola Nyholm wants, right? Like, I know what he wants. I remember when...
Is his name actually Nicola? Is it not Nicholas?
No, it's Nicola Nyholm, I'm sure. I'm sure it is. That's correct. I mean,
she
if I'm
like a lovely young lady.
Yeah, that's what I mean. If I have given him a girl's name, I apologize.
It's inclusive.
I'm pretty sure it's Nicola.
I don't.
So anyway, I know what he wants, because I remember when that Fallen Skype leak was doing the rounds, and he was in there talking to Fallen about creating a players' union, right? And then he wanted to make a league. And then that league became this, being the start of it, you know, and we always knew they were going to branch out and do multiple events and have like a thing. And then it was like multiple team ownership. And it's like, I understand that he wants to sort of control many facets to it. What I would like is, I would like Refresh to completely divest themselves of all teams and just run some sick tournaments. Like, that would just be great, wouldn't it? Like, you know, I know there's not a lot of money in live tournaments, but here's one thing they did do. You know, they got, this is one of the great things about Denmark as well. Definitely have an event there. Public funding. You can get public funding for these events. And they did. Yeah. And they had this incredible stage, an incredible stadium experience. And I think if anybody can sort of leverage their business expertise and make a decent profit margin on a live event, it's going to be these guys. I really believe that. There you go. I'm saying nice things about Refresh. Imagine that. What a world. But certainly, I would like them to move away from, like, you know, they can still own the teams, but then their teams can't play at the event. Because imagine if Astralis had won. We end up with the whole Epicenter thing.
Yeah,
again.
I agree. Yeah. By the way, I obviously from day one I've been against that concept. Yeah. I will say until recently there were no rules stopping it, and that doesn't mean you should do something because there's no rules. I'm just telling you that people will. Like, I know for a fact if Riot hadn't, for example, limited ownership of teams, TSM would have two teams, Dignitas would have had two teams. You know, people would have had they would have gone to the boundaries of what was allowed. All of them. It wouldn't have been about ethics. It'd be about, we're allowed to do this. This is business. Let's scale our businesses up. Let's make more money. Let's go. And by the way, there's even a level to which they would all justify themselves, which you can't even disagree with, which is, for example, if TSM had a second League of Legends team, I've no doubt they would have treated that League of Legends team better than, let's say, Velocity, Complexity, Team 8, whoever the fuck had that team instead. Likewise, if you're Refresh and it's not illegal, you're going to say, yeah, but Richard, here's the thing. I want to do tournaments and I want to give Astralis the highest support possible and help them get on their feet before they become a big business. Now, you can definitely bring up all the cynical reasons why they have their own ulterior motives, definitely. But you also can't deny that first part. It could certainly be true as well. That's the best part, right? It could be both and, not either or. So I would just say in that scenario, I agree. I would rather they didn't do like conflict of interest type scenarios like that. I think it's kind of fucked up in its own way. I will say this though. Let me make one point, right?
Sure.
This is one thing that does piss me off. One thing that they accomplished in this tournament that apparently people don't give them credit for because the streams weren't as good and day one was a train wreck, right? One of the whole reasons I ever made my comments about Poland, if you ever go back and listen, is I am making the point. Chris Chan, the host of the show, is putting it in a context of, wow, you must be so excited to go to Poland tomorrow. And I'm obviously like, well, no, I aren't. Context being, I've been to millions of events, mate. Why would I be super excited to go there? And then he's like, yeah, but it's in a huge stadium. First of all, not in a huge stadium, in actually a very small stadium for like sporting or like arena standards. Secondly, I happen to know a few things about it's free to enter that particular stadium. This is not the same sort of event people are billing it up to be. Even the people who know it is not are lying to the public that this is esports hitting the mainstream. No, esports hitting the mainstream is when you fill out the fucking nationwide arena for MLG Columbus with half the fans all paying to come and watch and support their teams. Esports is where you fill out like Dallas Cowboys Stadium one day, hopefully with 60,000 fans who want to watch the League of Legends World Championship. Yeah. Or when you get a tiny country with a few million and you sell 12,000 tickets to come and watch a live Counter-Strike tournament. That is amazing. Like, it could definitely get bigger. It's not the biggest, but that's how cynical people have gotten to where they act like, well, this is just an everyday event. No, that was a massive deal in itself.
Yeah, totally. And you know, look, I said it, man. I think there's definitely an achievement in and of itself here. It's just nothing about the broadcast, the home broadcast.
I would never argue about the broadcast. I couldn't watch it, obviously. I was just at the event, wasn't I? Mm.
So look, let's actually talk about some of the games that happened there, and then we'll wrap the fucking show up. So obviously all the games were sick. We're not going to break them down. Probably you didn't get a chance to watch them all. We'll talk in generalities about some of the teams and sort of their consistency. So NIP came off the back of having won IEM Oakland.
And they dominated, won every fucking map. In the final, they cruised. They actually showed that they were better than all these teams. And every NIP fan was justified as not a mentally unhinged moron.
Yes. And obviously, none of that true. They came to... you know what, Doug? Again, remember, right? You handled the whole...
I know. I did,
Let's just fucking take that breath.
Let's take the NIP respite. Okay, let's go.
Yeah, there you go. There you go. Right, just dial it down. Go back to 8. Right, but yeah, so they came here, and, you know, it started out all right. They got a draw with FaZe, and maybe people started to believe, but then the wheels fucking came off. You know, they lose heavily to Astralis. They lose heavily to SK Gaming. They lose heavily to G2. They beat North. They're always going to beat North. MSL has a mental block when it comes to NIP. He even admits this if you talk to him. He's like, yeah, NIP, they'll always beat us. Like, well, all right. So they're always good to beat North as long as MSL thinks that way. And they did absolutely fuck them. It was 16-2. But overall, it was like, it kind of underlined the problem with NIP. It's like every time you have that launch pad, you're like, yeah, this is it. They've got it. They've done it. They're back. It just, they go to the next event and they just disappoint. And I think this is where fans are maybe starting to get a little bit frustrated, especially when you can point to a player on a roster that's clearly underperforming. I don't want to just regurgitate what we said yesterday, but I think they're one player move away from being a good lineup. You obviously were there at the event. Did you identify any issues that they were having? Why they kind of fell down?
Well, first of all, like, Rez's level came down from where it was at the other tournament, where he was obviously the MVP. So if you have a player who was just a bit player in your team, went up to the level to be the MVP and you won the event, odds are you aren't going to win the next event if he goes back down in performance. So that's just an obvious pattern to look at. Then you got to throw in, this is the worst field for NIP to play because they were obviously the worst team of the six there. Like, the best case scenario you could maybe make is maybe they're better than North. Even then, I'd say that's pretty touch and go. North still has a pretty solid string of results, you know. I don't think you can say they're better than G2 because, I mean, just look at the results G2 has. They've had maybe one bad tournament. Like, I think actually overall, NIP was where they should have been because they were only facing the elite teams. One of the other factors of when they were at IEM Auckland is because IEM Auckland has these huge fields and obviously their own kind of wacky format, it actually ensures that you never get the top six teams into the playoffs. So while, yes, NIP had to beat two of the best teams there, you also didn't have the most insanely stacked playoff ever where even the quarterfinals is some insane match, you know. So I think NIP just isn't that good a team, quite frankly. I think in this kind of field, I never expected them to have a chance to win.
I mean, I don't necessarily agree with them. It was like, you're right and you're wrong in a way. I at least that's what I feel. Like, I do think that IEM Oakland is the proof of concept about NIP. But it's like I say, you know, everybody's got to be on their fucking game. If they're not, the deficiencies are too pronounced. And... like you said, Dennis is absolutely wrecking it for Astralis, and he's a free agent. Like, somebody's got to do the right thing here. Somebody.
It's mental, isn't it? Like, I don't think people actually noticed that, because the thing is, in the final, Dennis, like, cooled off a load. But even taking the final into account, go and look at his stats. They were, like, MVP numbers that he had in this tournament. And obviously, he's just standing in. They had to speak English so he could even understand them. And he was just playing... fuck knows what role, just in a few spots doing whatever he wants. So yeah, the guy's a monster.
Yeah, and I think clearly Glaive took that tack. He was just like, we're just going to let him do whatever the fuck he wants because he's a stand-in. And Astralis still made it to the final, which I suppose is something we may as well segue into. Astralis started the tournament, I mean, and it was insane. You know, buoyed by the home crowd. Dennis, the first game against SK when they 16-3'd him, you're like, holy fucking shit. I mean, it was ridiculous. Dennis posting MVP numbers, statistically the strongest player at the whole tournament for at least the first three games. And kind of just as they went through it, you know, a draw with North again, that's like just the Danish to Danish rivalry. You're going to see those like anomaly kind of results. To make it all the way to the final with a stand-in, with this sort of black cloud over them because Device isn't very well, and knowing that the rest of their year is pretty much fucked because they're going to have to use stand-ins and mercenaries, whatever you want to call them, just to get through. To make it to the final was a hell of an achievement, and it was great for the tournament that they did.
Yes.
But here's what I will say. Right now, I've been predicting an Astralis drop-off for months. The one reason for that was kind of like there were some players who were just kind of cruising. I don't know what fucking Dupree has changed. He is in a fucking god-tier form right now. I was watching him do things. I mean, he AWPed this tournament, for fuck's sake. And I don't remember when I've seen him do that. And he wasn't just AWPing and it was like passable AWPing, like Fox levels of AWPing or whatever. This was fucking insane, high level. If you didn't know anything about Counter-Strike, yes, and I told you Dupree was a top three AWPer in the world, you would have believed me, levels of AWPing. What the fuck?
No, it was ridiculous. And people forget. I mean, Astralis was literally a round from winning the tournament. They were on championship point in the 30th round of the third map. Now, they didn't win it. They obviously lost. That's why I said at the time, I actually think if they'd have done that, that might have been the new most ridiculous like performance with the standing. Because even the past ones, you know, like NIP won that Star Series with Makaleli, but he had played with them in the past, you know, and it was right after the player break. You know, there was all this context that made it not as sick. SK and FaZe are fully ready to go, mate. Like, these teams are no joke. And so if you can do what they did at this time, yeah, it was outrageous. I mean, something I explained in a video I put out yesterday. I do think a lot of the factors are things that you could never replicate. Like, for example, say tomorrow, like a naive, like, sports owner, the Refresh guy says, right, you know what, fuck it. Device is kicked. Dupree, you play as spots. We're signing Dennis. I think you would never see this again. I think this is a one-off, you know. And I think a lot of it, you look at it, like, for example, most of the games, they were just rolling, like, massive CT halves. Again, this isn't so much tactics and preparation. You know, it wasn't really like Astralis Counter-Strike in many ways. I think the other three who weren't Dupree and Dennis tried to play a normal game. And I think they gave a lot of freedom to Dupree and Dennis and just let them kind of, we'll go as far as you can take us. And as it happened, both went off and therefore they were able to ride them to the final. But there's probably another world in which they come like fourth or something, you know. I mean, funnily enough, coming into this, some of the people in the green room were like, oh, are they going to win any maps? And I was like, well, I think they're definitely going to win some maps. Maybe we're like two, you know, because I thought to myself, they know the maps already. You know, you have a rough idea of what the opponent's going to do. You could probably steal a map here and there. It's outrageous to think they almost won this tournament, though.
Oh, yeah, absolute fucking insanity. And just...
And it does show, as you're saying, like, the thing about Dupree is, because he spent so much of his career in the shadow of Device, and then after this point, when his team's been the best they've ever been in Astralis, he had to give up even more space to Kirby, who took his role as the entry fragger. People even, obviously, Glaive gets all the credit for being the genius who turned the team around. Zipnix wins all the clutches. Yeah. He's always last in line, isn't he? He's always the guy where everyone's like, oh, yeah, he's a good player. You have to understand, if you go back to like 2014, 2015, this guy was a monster. He was one of the best players in the world. It would be like if someone from 10 years from now was like, I've heard that Cold Zero guy was good, but was that Fur guy any good? He was a fucking machine. Just because he was on a team with another guy who was really good. Don't underestimate, he's mad skilled. And the fact he could show us now he can secondary AWP, the guy can do anything.
Yeah, I know, like, serious. Here's one thing I will say. I saw Device, obviously, he's feeling a bit despondent anyway because he's sick and not going to play for the rest of the year. Interesting that the debate even sprung up, like, should Astralis just keep Dennis? I was like, it's like, put down that fucking moonshine.
Here's the funny thing, even if there'd been a case for it, right, people talk about me, Richard, like I have no tact. I wouldn't just be like Device is sat out there in a fucking hospital bed, dude. He looks, oh, well, team's done well. Fuck, I hope everyone's cheering him on. Cut Device. I'm dead as fuck, you know. Can't even get a day. This can't happen next week. Come on.
It's like, I hope that bloody machine like powers down. So we don't even have to make it awkward. It was so fucked up. I'm like, It just astounds me sometimes. It's like, has Device not been one of the most consistent players in Counter-Strike throughout 2017?
At least they said, Rich, that this last event, the one where he was ill and he didn't play the first game, IAM Auckland, I believe the stat was that this was the first event, I think something like ever in his career, where he was below like a 1.0 rating on HLT.
Yeah.
Like every event, even think of the events, by the way, where they came last place, guy still got his numbers. You know, that's like how outrageously good he's been.
Yeah, no, it was insane. And again, like, you've just got to discount anybody that brings that up as a serious debate. Like, you know, we all wish Device well. We want him to get back in the team. And anybody who was sort of like, they should just leave Device. Fuck you. You know nothing about Counter-Strike. Go watch something else, please. Let's talk about FaZe. FaZe, again. You know, this is meant to be sort of this era for FaZe, right? Like, it's all there for the taking. Another tournament, really, where they sort of started to, you know, show their weaknesses a little bit. They had a couple of strange results. You know, you get a draw with NIP, you lose to North. And also, I mean, even though they managed to sort of pull it back by beating SK, they had that must-win game against Astralis, and they were in the driving seat at one point and kind of like threw it away, and Kierby went off big time in that match, as did Dupree. But just a very strange one. And again, it's kind of like, to touch on what we talked about yesterday, do we need to start revising what we think we know about FaZe? Like, can they honestly be this all-conquering team? Because I felt they should have definitely been in the final of this tournament.
I think they actually fucked this one up themselves because, like, for example, one of the games that was bizarre was they lost to North, right? Now, a detail about this tournament that a lot of people still actually are not aware of is that they did the vetoes for the tournament 2 weeks before the tournament so that you could know what map you're playing, and it made it a different tournament. Because, for example, funnily enough, by the way, I think a team like Astralis and North are two of the teams who would have benefited from this in this scenario, because they know exactly, like, there is no veto. You know what you're playing already. Now, here's what's bizarre. They chose to play North and NIP both on train. But if you go and look at the veto for the North game, the one they lost, right, it's true North historically didn't like train, but actually have a pretty good record on it recently. But what's bizarre is FaZe vetoed Mirage themselves. Now, FaZe are unbelievably good on Mirage. Now, North is good as well, but that says to me that Carrigan is actively trying to work on their map pull, and he was thinking, right, well, train's not as great a map for North either. Let's get it on that one. Let's kind of, like, prove ourselves. We'll play the two worst teams in the tournament, Nip and North on it. We'll get our chops under our feet. You know, as you say, they only lost the Astralis game very narrowly. Again, a team you can't prep for in the team.
Yeah, but here's what's fucked up about the Astralis game, dude. Okay. Is that right? FaZe are going to be the best team on Inferno.
Yes.
Right. No, but they lose on Inferno, and they lose to an Astralis with a stand-in on Inferno.
Right.
This was a mind-blowing fuck-up for me, because it's like, hey, you've got the draft you want. They're on Inferno. That's the map you're going to play. It's FaZe's wheelhouse. Nobody really has mastered Inferno, supposedly the same degree as FaZe. Boom. Go win that game. Go to the final. Nah, they fuck up and they lose out. They miss out by a round.
Well, that's also another aspect people don't know about the Astralis side of it, though. That's actually something that helped Astralis, because the vetoes were already done. Well, it turns out, because they only were playing Overpass and Inferno in the group stage, when they brought Dennis in with no practice, they only have to focus on those two maps. That's why as soon as they got to the final and had to play, I mean, I was amazed they won that Mirage game. It was very impressive, but it was mainly Dupree who did that. And then when they got to Cash, I bet they never played Cash once with Dennis, and amazing they could even do that, you know. So I will say there's like an extenuating factor there, because like one of the things FaZe is supposed to have as an advantage was taken away from them against Astralis, which is Astralis is the team that had a bunch of players just playing a loose style and that you can't prep for because they don't do the same shit all the time. So in a way, I think that's one of the edges that Carrigan normally has when he plays them is, first of all, he fucks them in the veto. Can't do that here. It's already done weeks in advance. And you do the veto, remember, when you think Device is playing. And then secondly, normally you benefit from the fact that, the good thing about Astralis is because they play structured, I have an idea of what they're going to do. I have no fucking clue now, you know. How do I adapt? They're making it up as they go along, you know. I'll agree. I don't think they were as I thought they should have done better. I thought it should have been them in the final, basically. Them and Astralis should have been the final, in my opinion.
Yeah. So, SK, holy shit, where do we even start with this one? You know, it's got to be said, whenever you fucking write these guys off, it's insane. And you know, look, Cold Zera, we can wax lyrical about him all day long. One of the greatest players to ever touch the game, no doubt. And certainly one of the greatest rookie finds in esports history.
Sure, yeah.
You know, we talked about Hobbit on yesterday's show, but this is unreal. This is a guy who sort of, when he was brought into the team, everyone was like, who the fuck is he? Well, turns out, motherfuckers, best player in the world ever. You know, just insane skill ceiling. Yeah, I mean, like, I think he... His skill ceiling goes past where Olaf Meister was in 2015, honestly. So, incredible stories. But this final were against Astralis, the three-mapper, you know, Astralis have the home crowd. Dupree was going off, you know, winning 1v4 clutches with no scopes and all sorts of insane stuff. To have the tenacity to battle back from that, especially going into Inferno, that's the mad thing about this final. Astralis beat SK on Mirage. Not supposed to happen. Then they go into Inferno. SK Gaming historically struggle on Inferno. Astralis had just beat FaZe on Inferno within the context of the tournament. And boom, SK don't just win on Inferno, something that never happens because they cannot play that map. They do it 16-8. It is one-sided. It is dominant. And it's about Bolts and fucking Fallen, dude. Mad performances from both of those guys. Fallen in particular has cemented his position. I mean, as if it was ever up for doubt anyway. He's just one of the greatest players, let alone in-game leaders. Yes. It was insane. It was insane.
I mean, this final in all regards, like, basically was one of those ones where it didn't make sense. Like, for example, SK started the tournament kind of shit. They actually got wrecked by their two main rivals, Astralis and FaZe, in heavy numbers. They get to the final thanks to the way it all played out. Like we mentioned, FaZe had that draw against NIP, and then you got the scenario at the end where you had the two teams playing off, and Astralis obviously won the game narrowly to deny FaZe the final. So you come into the final, right? As I said, Astralis has only practiced Overpass and Inferno because they're the only maps they know they're playing. They don't even know they're going to be in the final. So they play Mirage, which is arguably SK's strongest map. They are unbelievably good. And I have to say, the way this game was going, SK wins that game all day long if Dupree doesn't do those two ridiculous rounds in a row. The one where he has to double no scopes, no, double AWP someone through a smoke who's defusing, and then they actually had a round where they had a full gun round against pistols. SK get them down to, I think it was like a 1v4 or something. And even though they only have pistols, you know, he had an AWP. Like, normally you're going to get that round. But again, he kills everyone. He even did like a no scope on the last guy. So if it wasn't for that, I think this actually would have been a win for SK in the first map. The Inferno one, yeah, obviously they've had massive problems there. And it was largely Fallen who took over this game.
Oh, yeah, sure.
From there on, for the whole final, was the man, right? He was just a legend. I mean, I will say, in a sense, he has kind of crafted a team that I don't think anyone else could have, because he basically, it's almost like he put in all his work actually developing the players early in the team, so that now he doesn't have to like micro them as much as some of the tactical in-game leaders, which then leaves him the room to now be more of a fragger himself. And it does seem like that is the return of Bolt's returning has brought back the FNX effect, where FNX somehow was the guy who made the space for Fallen to be this superstar player. Even so, though, the performance on Cash was like above and beyond even the shit he used to do last year. Because like I remember one round very vividly, right? Whenever Astralis plays Cash, they always try to do these slow mid-takes, right? And they do it exactly how you'd teach like a young player to do it. Like, you always check this spot while your teammate guards your other spot here, so your angle's clear. Then you do a smoke here. Now that smoke's there, you know, you can look over here. He would do shit like, when he saw the smoke come in at mid, he would just step in front of it, kill the guy who'd thrown it, and then step back behind it. Like, what are you supposed to do versus that?
Yeah, it was mad. I mean, to drop, you know, a final map, and sure, it went to overtime and everything, but, you know, 38 kills from your in-game leader, just, you know, it was ridiculous. Definitely one of the performances of 2017, and again, when your in-game leader does that, you're always going to fucking have a chance, right? So here's the question, to sort of wrap up talking about the results. This SK Gaming side with Bolts, is this the best iteration of SK Gaming? Like, can they go further than previous teams? They've won two titles now, and this is early days.
I think it has the potential to be, especially because, unfortunately, when they had FNX, like, first of all, he actually, I think, had some Like, I think his first tournament, for example, he had, like, one game against TSM where he, like, mad overperformed and, like, was winning every clutch. And I was like, come on, this can't continue. Plus, anyone who knew that guy knew he's someone who just he's not going to last long term. It's like having Terrell Owens on your team. You better get fucking done in the first year or two, or you know it's going to shit, because it just inevitably happens, you know. He's a guy where it's like, if he doesn't cause conflicts with someone, he himself's going to break down so much. He's just not someone who's in it for the long haul in the same way, you know. So I do think that, like, they could exceed what the other one did, because I think Boltz has an amazing mentality. Like, I think he's one of those guys who is a Zipnix. Like, he actually wants to do the shit roles, and he wants to be the guy who supports you while you carry the game. You know how hard it is to find someone who can do that, who's actually good? Yeah, don't worry. The dog shit players, like Spiddy, will do it. By the way, there's some people who are dog shit, like Dennis, the one from Mouse, who are dog shit and don't want to do those roles and think they can frag. And then when they can't frag, go, it's your fault, you made me feel bad. And it's like, fuck you, 700 ways to Sunday. You know, but anyway, back to my point. Boltz is a fucking G. He's got his head screwed on. He is sound. He knows what's going on. He lets other people be the star.
Yeah, no, and it's mad. Like you say, to find a player who is that talented, who could be a star in his own right, by the way, who is always willing to sort of forego the spotlight, is crazy, dude. And like I say, I mean, I'm super happy for him, because the Immortals thing, yeah, we talked about that to death. It was a fucking disgrace for him to end up on SK Gaming.
Well, that's the cool thing, isn't it? Him and Steel both got out. They actually both did get in the teams. That's pretty cool.
And credit to the Immortals organization for letting them get out. And, you know, Boltz, like I say, I'm super happy for him. I mean, Steel might have got the rough end of the wedge, like going a liquid.
See where it's going.
Yeah. Just saying. But yeah, I'm happy for Boltz, dude. Like, and what a great endorsement as well. Fallen, Tackle, all the guys. They're like, yeah, Boltz is the missing part of the jigsaw. We're back. This is it. So I can't wait for this fucking major. By the way, it's going to be so sick. Like the sort of level of competition. Oh, that's a point, isn't it? Fuck, I forgot. Yeah, they got to use Phelps for the major, don't they? Why did you have to tell me that? I suppose it doesn't matter.
I thought this was just a show where we were going to criticize all the decisions we didn't like about tournaments. I thought it was all about putting people's feet to the fire and that, you know.
No. It wasn't.
Is it because I is wearing a hat?
It was the blast special.
Just the blast. Oh, my mistake.
Yeah. You almost had it right. Not bad. Well, fucking people can roast me on Twitter about that later if they want. So anyway, look, let's just wrap up the show. One last piece, and then we'll totally do it. We'll wrap it up. CLG. A lot of people wanted us to talk about this, and we won't get another opportunity. But obviously, we talked a lot about the CLG team and how it's been a disappointment for me. But, you know, we were talking about maybe Stanislaw goes there and does something with the two young prospects they have in the form of Ethan and Kooster, riding the Kooster hype train. He's coming back, baby. You watch. Best AWPer 2018. It's going to happen. Interestingly enough, Counter Logic Gaming, with the loss of FNS, they were just like, well, fuck this game.
Oh, by the way, I love that as well. Apparently, Stanislaw is just absolutely shanghaied, and he can't even get in a CLG.
CLG would rather abandon all of Counter Logic and give Stanislaw a job. Like, what the fuck? What's this guy done? CLG, like, I don't understand why they've said we are completely leaving Counter-Strike. Seems a weird thing. Why not just say we're disbanding the team and we're going to rebuild? Why? I don't know. I thought that was a bit strange to me, especially given there's so much left in it's not like the game's in decline or anything, you know. I don't understand it. So what did you make of this?
For me, I think that CLG, when they got a team in Counter-Strike, didn't do it for the same reasons as other people did. Like, I don't think they ever loved the game as much. If you remember, the timing of when they got their team was it was that first ever MLG event. It was the MLG X Games Aspen beginning in 2015, which was when, at the same event, I saw the Team Liquid owner and Reginald and TSM. I saw all these people at the event, essentially themselves looking for teams. Obviously, they all got them, you know, the Envious team guy, etc. And all these guys, it was the new hot thing to get was, well, Counter-Strike's getting big, get a team, you know, the sticker money, all this stuff. So everyone at the time thought, it's a no-brainer. After seeing how CLG's squad's done over the years, right, the best they ever had was that one tournament, MLG Columbus, where they had a top 8. Aside from that, like, yeah, they had a top 4 in ESL Pro League once because they're best of ones. You know, they haven't had a great run in Counter-Strike. Like, actually, a lot of the best players for their teams, sadly, JDM, Tarek, have gone and had better results elsewhere, which is kind of an indictment of their squad, unfortunately. And first, as far as I know, the first 2 years were about them keeping the same squad because they'd signed two-year contracts at the beginning because they were very naive players who'd never been in a top org. So first of all, those guys were all trapped in contracts, which as far as I know, were like the nightmare type where it's like, haha, you get paid the same as you did in January of 2015, and it is now the end of 2016, and everyone else in the world gets 10 times what you do. You know, there was that's why Hazed was the one always in those conversations on Twitter, like, any teams don't get that much. Like, yeah, you don't get that much, motherfucker. You get a crust of bread and some beatings and shut the fuck up. Exactly. And two smacks before bedtime. That's what you can get your little cunt. Like, yeah, I know he doesn't, but people like Clown Now was making some money. Okay, that's what I'm saying. So anyway, after that, obviously then they tried to go that whole angle of like, we're trying to develop some talent, man. So you're saying you haven't got any money then? Nah, bro, nah, I'm trying to develop some talent. Yeah, all right, mate. Just, yeah, develop the shit out some talent, right? So that meant that they actually did with the same thing they did in League, Rich, which is they actually got like a whole coaching structure and you had to like be part of the CLG culture. And if you remember, this is when I made fun of them when they came top eight at that Star Series tournament, quite unexpectedly. Yeah. So they did an amazing result. They had to beat Gambit on Cobblestone. And I can't remember who else. I think they beat Immortals as well. Like, they beat some good teams at the time.
Yeah.
Immediately after they get eliminated by Astralis, they're like head of, you know, COO type guy comes out with a blog where he's like, yo, I was actually disappointed in this performance. You know, I expected more from them. I expected them to go further. And you're just thinking to yourself, either you know something I don't, mate, and you are just some straight moneyball motherfucker who's taken this team to the top with pieces I thought weren't that good, or you're in for a bit of heartache and about to learn that you have overvalued, like they're the sort of people, like, you know, when I make fun of North and say they train in a football stadium, right? I make fun of that just because they banged on about it so much. I don't make fun of them. They don't say that that's the reason they'll succeed. That's a side point. CLG's whole reason is like, well, I don't need to buy top players or get any big talents. If I just develop them and have a sports psychologist tell them to remember to always have a banana in the morning for potassium, then maybe they'll win the tournament. It's like, you don't know anything about sports, mate. Like, that's a brilliant way to run a Boy Scouts club. To run a professional sports franchise probably doesn't make any sense. So to me, I agree with them getting out. Like, they've done nothing that made any sense. They've just wasted their money. As we saw in a tweet today from their old coach, I'm a pet, who now works for Optic, even said, you know, they wouldn't let him do player changes. And I've heard throughout the years, I know when Peter was there as a coach, he wanted to bring in like Makaleli, you know, good players from Europe. They could never get these people through the door. And like, I think at one point, Tarek wanted to get Zantarez over there because he's got the whole Turkish connection. As far as I can tell, they're one of those teams where it's like, you could make a better team out of the people that they wouldn't accept than they ever had in their team.
Yeah, and I was reading, and again, like I say, I won't labour the point. I know it's getting late for you guys. So, you know, I read FNS's twit longer, which was illuminating. It's probably worth discussing on the next show, actually. But you can have a look at it yourself. Basically, he talks about, you know, a little sort of friction with Ryu when he came in, how he didn't want it. Like, FNS was saying, I didn't want a coach, actually. I don't want to. I wanted to be in charge of the team. Pretty much and do things my way, you know, which is interesting. I mean,
in ESEA Premier, you'll get all the chances you want, FNS, so have at it.
No, I mean, like I say, I think FNS is like, he's like, I'll be real.
He's a cool guy, actually. He's pretty reasonable. Yeah,
no, it's not even that, though. If, you know, whether you're a cool guy or not, I actually think like he's got a good Counter-Strike mind.
Yeah, he's a decent leader.
Yeah,
I even said, I always thought. When he used to be stuck on CLG in the past, that I always thought they should have made the move and brought him into Cloud9. If you want an in-game leader and he has to be from NA, at least that guy has experience and has worked with some of your players before. He worked with Automatic, he'd worked with Tarek. I thought it was an obvious move to make, but for whatever reason, you know, they don't appreciate in-game leaders in NA.
No, they don't. So look, there it is. There's the show. It's time to do the credits. Unless there's anything else you wanted to get into. Yeah, you good?
Just love to all peoples of the world.
Yeah, exactly right. That's what we're about. So, right, let's shout out to our $100 patrons. It's always there on a thing. I fuck that up every time. Big Hungry, of course, in with a big $400. Much love to you, Seth. Chris N. Wynn, much love to you too. Jerky's Minion, of course. Dean Tangless, Mateus Piotkowski, and Detlef Insomniac. And our $50 patrons as well. Funky Boy, Daniel Plamenov, Yordanov, Tim Douglas, Marcus Kiumpa, Saad Sawar, CMFX, Marius Yorosund, Carlos Gukov, Sia Firm, and William Southern. And thanks very much, obviously, to all of you for making the show possible. Everybody who chips in a dollar, all the people who watch. We know it was a bit of a shit show this month. Duncan was away. I was away. We've been doing this. We get back to a much more regular routine now as we descend into the holiday season. So don't worry too much about that. So yes, thanks to you all for watching. Thanks to my co-host Duncan. Thanks to Sam, who probably dozed off at some point. But you're there. Yeah. You literally didn't say anything in this show. You haven't been reading them YouTube comments.
I'm not
Sammy.
The one with the names in the boxes, mate. You do the speaking, I do the buttons.
All right, just checking, because I thought maybe you'd seen them YouTube contest. Was like, who is the guy who just laughs all the time? Just checking. Anyway, it was a great show. I thought we touched on some great topics. We'll be back next week on our regular appointed day and appointed time, all being well. So until then, take care of yourselves, and we will see you on the next By the Numbers.